He's a big man in the movie industry, and he makes big bets. The biggest, perhaps, on himself and his family name. You know what it is. Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein, to be precise. You know his parents' names as well, Miriam and Max. But the reason you know them is because Harvey Weinstein and his brother Bob named the company they founded in 1979 Miramax Films, after their parents. Then, in 2005, Bob and Harvey founded the Weinstein Company, and since then, the brothers have received 261 Oscar nominations and taken home 62 Academy Awards. But before all those accolades, Harvey Weinstein was just another kid in Queens, and he says that's where he found his love for stories that transformed into a love for storytelling in the movies.
For me, it's on the page, and everybody's got their own history and their own background. So cut to me, 10 years old. I lived in city housing. It was called Electchester in Flushing, and, you know, rent-controlled apartments, you know, and we were lower middle class, whatever you want to call it.
Right, right.
We were our own thing, and we were happy. So that's more important. I'm 10 years old. I'm playing a game. Daniel Boone, you know, and the Indians. Well, I was Daniel Boone's, one of his frontiersmen, and probably a really lousy one at that, because one of the Indians, quote, the kid who lived next door, had a pointed musket, and it got into my eye. You know, the next thing I know, I'm having 60 stitches. And the eye is almost out, and I can't go to school because I think they think I look like Quasimodo, and they don't want to scare the other kids who are 10 years old, and, you know, I'm coming in with patches. You know, this is pre-Beverly Hills plastic
there
surgery. You know, today I would just, you know, go and have Botox put over my eye and I'd be, you know, fine. But in any case, they won't let me go to school. And I'm bored to death. There were no 600 channels. There were three. And in my house, you know, I mean, two of them didn't work. You know, even
right.
if you held the aerial properly.
And the UHF and that whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure.
With a hanger, still didn't work. So Frances Goldstein was the woman who lived next door. She was a librarian. Cut to the chase. I said, teach me to read. Teach me to read really well. You mean, show me. And thus I fell in love with reading because I went on. I couldn't go to school for 6 months and a little bit into the term afterwards. And as a result, I just took a great adventure with her that began with, you know, wonderful American books and ended up somewhere with H.G. Wells' Outline of History and the Russians and not all the Russians. You know, I mean, once I got to Dostoevsky, at 11, I was couldn't make it.
And there's
but Tolstoy was easy. Tolstoy was like a good soap opera, War and Peace.
Now, I've got this sort of Miramax image in my mind of Harvey Weinstein sitting there with an eye patch on reading Tolstoy.
That is
the truth. Kind of it. That is it.
That's the truth.
Oh, that's
so I always loved the page. And then I had an English teacher when I was in seventh grade, and he was a master at, you know, seducing us kids, you may know, into the world of literature. And I remember a book called Giants in the Earth by O.E. Rolvog, and I remember that too. So here's, for me, it's always been, I hate the pitch. I don't go to the pitch. I don't think I've ever bought a movie on a pitch. When they say somebody's coming up to pitch, I try to hide under the table.
From reading Tolstoy to reading Tarantino, we'll continue the conversation with Harvey Weinstein in just a few minutes. John digs into Weinstein's meteoric rise in the indie film world. He's known for his strong opinions and intimidating presence, but when he sat down with John Hockenberry yesterday, Harvey Weinstein was nothing short of engaging, warm, and funny. Weinstein is, of course, the founder of Miramax Films and the Weinstein Company, along with his brother Bob. The brothers have made some of our most enduring films, Shakespeare in Love, to some of their newest offerings, My Week with Marilyn and The Artist. Along the way, they've received 261 Oscar nominations and won 62 Academy Awards. Harvey came into the studio yesterday to share some stories about his most successful films and how they went from page to screen. The first one John was eager to hear about was the 1994 cult classic Pulp Fiction by then up-and-coming writer-director Quentin Tarantino.
Quentin gives me the script, and I'm flying from Los Angeles to Boston, you know, and I'm at page 40 or something like that. And I just called and said, it doesn't get any better than this. I'm doing this. You know, and then by the time the trip had ended, I mean, I'd made three phone calls off the plane, you know, and just said, I'm doing this. There's no way I'm not doing this. It was just beautifully there. Everything was on the page. He said, any cuts? I said, that language is just too beautiful to cut.
You know what they call a quarter pounder with cheese in Paris? They don't call it a quarter pounder with cheese?
Oh, man, they got the metric system. They wouldn't know what the quarter pounder is.
Then what do they call it?
They call it Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese.
That's right.
What do they call a Big Mac?
Big Mac's a Big Mac, but they call it Love Big Mac.
From the close read to the decisive action, how did it work with Crying Game?
I read the script, too. You know, but I think I have to give my brother huge credit on that. Sometimes Bob is so enthusiastic in the Crying Game, I have to tell you, he just said, it's great, it's great, it's great, we're doing it.
If you kiss me, it would really get his goat. Now, if you ask me to meet you tomorrow, it would really drive you insane.
I mean, just he was the same on Sex, Lies, and Videotape. It's great, it's great. And, you know, he saw the movie. He said, I don't care. I don't care what they want. We're going to be the highest bidder by a lot. We don't care if we have to embarrass. There was a place where he saw the movie. But Crying Game, Bob just said, we're doing it.
What about your two current movies?
On my week with Marilyn, I read Colin Clark's Prince, The Showgirl, and Me. In the 90s, when it first came out, I love books about the making of movies. And The Prince and the Showgirl was the name of Laurence Olivier's directed film with Marilyn Monroe.
Do they all fall as easily as that? Those Maisie Springfields and all those others?
Before your insults grow too great to be borne, Miss Marina, I'm ringing for your motor.
Oh, no, don't do that. I mean, I don't want you to get your car out again. I live way out in Brixton. I could just walk.
You will go in the motor.
And it's not a very good movie, except she's good in it. And the behind the scenes is much better story. It's like, you know, this terrible movie is being made. I mean, you know, Marilyn Monroe is fighting with Olivier. It's about the method. You know, Marilyn is the method with Lee Strasberg. Olivier is classically trained. You know, there's a great story about Olivier that Hawk Koch, and I guess it said that on Marathon Man, Dustin Hoffman said something like, I can't get into this, boy. How do you do it, Sir Lawrence? He says, it's called acting.
Yeah.
You know,
and those days.
And so Olivier Marilyn clash. She's got Paula Strasberg, Lee Strasberg's wife, the great acting coach, and she's got to feel it. It's got to be truthful. She's got to find the meaning in it. And Olivier says, why don't you do what you do? You know, which is just, you know, be sexy. And, you know, and when you watch it in the movie, Michelle Williams makes Marilyn Monroe so sympathetic. So that when Olivier says, be sexy, the audience gasps.
Yeah,
they howl at him like he's Snidely Whiplash, the bad villain.
And so, he's the one who gets handed his head in the story anyway.
He does. Deservedly so.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
So then in 2002, Colin Clark, you know, a man of letters, a documentary filmmaker in England, a noted producer and director, announces that he has some sort of cancer and he's dying. And he said there'd been a missing piece in his book, in his diary, you know, The Princess and the Showgirl. And then he released My Week with Marilyn, which details a romance with Marilyn Monroe. Now people said it's fanciful, it's not true, you know, this is ridiculous, you know, skinny dipping, you know, in the lake with Marilyn Monroe on the Queen's, on Windsor Castle grounds. Except that there's a letter that was written in 1956 to a friend of his in Portugal. And that letter was preserved, you know what I mean? And it says, I can't write this now, it would hurt Marilyn Monroe. And I don't want to do that, you know, and I don't want to reveal this. I have to wait until a more appropriate time, and now is not the time.
That's amazing.
And as a result, you know, he waited, and there's the rest of the story.
And there's the premise for a great movie, two people conflict, and that movie's out. With the Shakespeare in Love, is it, Tom Stoppard? I mean, can't go wrong with Tom Stoppard. Is that how the inspiration comes for you there?
I read the script. And another studio, Universal, had $9 million in costs. Julia Roberts was going to be the girl. Daniel Day-Lewis was going to be the guy. They were in preparation. Ed Zwick was going to be the director. And then something fell apart, and they scrapped the sets, the thing, and they had $9 million in. So this is a very famous script. This is really like the start of Miramax getting into production in a bigger way. And you know, I think everybody expected us to be in production with Quentin, but this was like bigger, you know, than anything else we'd done in areas outside of our comfort zone, which is working with Quentin. And working with Quentin is our comfort zone because it's just, you know, sit back and behold a miracle, which is him directing a movie. It's fun. He makes it entertaining. It's just so much. It's like going to the best cocktail party in town because you watch a master totally in charge, you know, of knowing everything, and he's wonderful, and his sets are amazing. So anyhow, here's another movie, which is the opposite. It's damaged. It's got writers, lawsuits, the whole bloody thing. I read this piece, and I go, this is amazing. It's just amazing.
So, a woman on the stage. A woman! I say this theater is closed.
Why, sir?
For lewdness and unshamefacedness, and for displaying a female on the public stage.
And I said to my brother, read this and tell me if I'm crazy. He goes, no, it's amazing. And I gave it to Donna Gelati, who had ended up producing it with me. And she said, it's amazing. And I said, okay. And then in a fit of absolute craziness, I gave it to my salespeople, you know, who help us sell internationally. And I said, read this. They go, it's terrible. We'll never get any money out of it. I mean, so you're not going to back me. And they said, nope. You know what I mean? I mean, for anything, nope, zero. You know, and I then went to Universal and figured out a deal. You mean how to make the movie with the limited budgets that I had. And I will say that Joe Roth, who was running right. Disney at the time, stepped up big time. I called him and I go, Joe, he said, are you passionate? I said, I'm passionate. He said, are you put yourself in front of a train for the script? I said, put myself in front of a train. I said, by the way, if I am going there, take Bob and Donna with me to cushion the blow. And Joe says, yes. And then we got Universal, who owned the original piece, to keep foreign because we didn't have a choice.
Right.
So, and the movie ended up grossing $300 million and won Best Picture and everything else. So, yes, my foreign sales department. I think from that point on, I could say, today we're going to make the chopped liver sandwich story, how the chopped liver sandwich story was invented. And they go, there's a big market for it foreign. They never say.
That's great.
After
That's
Shakespeare great. In Love, they say, perfect, chopped liver, we want that.
Well, Harvey, it's been great.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Harvey Weinstein, founder of Miramax Films and The Weinstein Company, speaking yesterday with John Hockenberry. Give us a call about that interview if you like your own chopped liver story, or on the story we had earlier about the hiring surge recently for young people. Is that what you're seeing as well? Tyrone writes on Facebook that he doesn't think so. He says, I'm still looking for my new job. You can join that conversation or any other at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We have a sad goodbye today at The Takeaway. Senior producer Mary Harris has been with the show from the very beginning. Is leaving us today. Lots to thank her for and lots of best wishes for the future. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway. Hats off, Mary.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.